In the fabled land of Northern California, nestled in the Valley of Sacramento, two friends begin a journey to enlighten the world about their experience living life as a Xenial. But what is a Xenial, you may ask? If you wish to know, then follow them on their adventures.
Welcome to the Xenial Chronicles. This is James.
This is Mike.
And, well, I'm not sure exactly where we're at right now here in California. I don't know whether the governor has done the full shutdown of any counties. Has that happened? I haven't been watching the news a lot lately.
He actually, over the weekend, the entire bottom half, I think, of California dropped below that 15% threshold. So I'm talking like LA County and I think San Joaquin and the Bay Area. Like three counties so dropped good. Under. Yeah, we are on our way down. They are quote unquote lockdown, but the lockdown is really like the more I see it, the lockdown is like really light.
Well, I've been busy the past week, so I really couldn't pay attention to the lockdown stuff.
Really?
Yeah, we had something major going on in the household.
Oh, really?
I've asked some permissions to see if we could talk about it. I'm glad to hear that the numbers are going down for the COVID infections. It's good to hear that it's going down.
I don't think the numbers are going down. Actually, it's bad. The numbers are going up fast.
So more lockdowns is supposed to be happening, right?
Yes, the lockdowns are supposed to be happening. So basically what happened last week was the governor of California, he said basically that instead of doing this county by county stay-at-home order lockdown, he split the state of California into five separate regions. You got Northern California, you have the Sacramento region, the fuller, greater Sacramento area. Yeah. You have the Bay Area, you have the San Joaquin area, and then you have the southern, like basically all of Southern California.
Yeah, LA and San Diego.
LA, San Diego, all that. So you have the Bay Area. I believe it's the Bay Area. And oh, so the idea of the whole thing was that it's based on ICU availability at this point.
Well, yeah, And by doing the specific areas,
yes,
you're instead of just doing county by county, which that's very funny. For instance, up I live north of Sacramento near the cities of Marysville and Yuba City.
Yes,
Marysville is in Yuba County.
Yes,
Yuba City is in Sutter County. I know that sounds really stupid for anybody that doesn't live in the area. Why is Yuba City in Yuba County? I don't know. People are dumb when they draw lines, imaginary lines on maps. People are dumb. And the only thing that separates these are the two county seats, the main cities in these counties. I mean, literally, there is no other city. I think there's just towns in the rest of Yuba County.
Yeah,
Marysville is like the only city, and then the rest of Yuba County is basically a wasteland.
Right.
And then in Sutter County, there's like a couple of small towns that are better than what Yuba County has, but Yuba City is basically the place. So those are the two county seats, where the county offices are at, county records are at. Those are the two main places. They are literally separated by a river. For people who don't know, I know you know, you've lived in the area.
Yeah.
They are separated by a river. There are two bridges. You go over these bridges, you're in another county, you're in the other city. So for instance, if Yuba County went on lockdown and Sutter County didn't, that would be preposterous because the interchange between the two, I mean, if you want a burger from Wendy's, you got to go to Sutter County in Yuba City because that's where Wendy's is. If you want to live eating at Jack in the Box, if you don't want to eat Jack in the Box and it kill you from food poisoning, you have to go over to Yuba City to get the Jack in the Box there, because the one in Marysville is just don't get the food from there.
Not to mention the zip code BS is just nuts over there. Like the fact that don't they have there's like one hospital for like two or three counties in that area, right? Its maternity ward is moved across the bridge to another county because they don't have the room.
Is it?
I think it's maternity ward or something like that. I can't remember.
No, that's all at Rideout now in the hospital in Marysville.
Oh, they put them all in Marysville now?
Yeah, the where the old hospital was there on Plymouth Street, where they had in Yuba City, where they had the maternity ward and whatnot.
Yeah,
that place is shut down.
Really? Completely. So it's back over. Okay, that's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, for this city area, the Marysville Yuba City area, there is only one major hospital. If you want another hospital, you have to go to the little tiny one that's up in Gridley, which is a good 30-40 miles north of U City, or you need to go into Chico or Oroville. Oroville's got a decent sized hospital. In fact, there's a lot of stuff that gets contracted out to the Oroville Hospital because they actually have more services available than what the hospital in Marysville has. If you need to get the tube down your throat and the tube up your butt to see what's going on in your intestines and your stomach, you got to go to Oroville.
Wow.
Which means you have to spend the whole night drinking that nasty fluid that completely drains your body. So you're sitting on the toilet the whole night.
Yeah.
Only to then go up to have to drive. If you live in the Marysville City area, you have to drive the 45 minutes up to Oroville. Have them put the tubes in you, whichever side they're going in, and hope that somebody drove you up there and is sitting around waiting, because you can't really drive afterwards because they put you under enough mild sedation that you're totally out of it when you wake up.
Yeah, do not operate heavy machinery.
Yeah, so somebody then has to drive you back after you've had all the tubes in you, the 45 minutes to get back home if you're from Marysville, Yuba City.
Holy smokes.
So yay for that. Already a procedure that most people don't want, at least not the medical style of that procedure. Most people don't want that. So, I mean, you have to drive super far to get it.
Yeah.
Now, that happens anyway. I mean, for the longest time, for anything major, people in the Marysville, Yuba City area would have to go into the Sacramento area, which can be, depending on which you go, anywhere from 45 minutes to, I would say, anywhere in the greater Sacramento area. But it can be anywhere from 45 minutes to an hour and a half, depending on which location they want you to go to for whichever thing that was necessary to be specialized
in. Good Lord, man.
So, It's always this area. I've described it before on here that it would not be out of place in the Midwest, this area of California.
Yeah,
it
really wouldn't.
It is almost the furthest from any kind of anything in California that you can get, the Marysville, Yuba City area, and still be considered, you know, a city area, an area of some kind of commerce. And it's relatively isolated, although we have a lot of citizens that live in this area that commute to the Sacramento area for work.
Mm-hmm.
Interestingly, we have people from the Sacramento area that commute up to the Marysville, Yuba City area for work. Weird. I don't know why. It costs more to live in Sacramento, so why wouldn't you live near Marysville, Yuba City? It's cheaper, other than the fact that there's nowhere good to eat, I guess.
Yeah, really, I guess.
I mean, tonight, because of our shifting things, normally Friday nights is our takeout food night, you know.
Yeah,
we get takeout food or delivery or something like that, right? Well, this week it didn't happen quite that way because of the events I'm about to talk about that went down within our household. So we're actually having tonight as our night. We have somebody that's hooking us up, bringing us some Panda Express tonight, because literally that's the best Chinese food that we can find around here is Panda Express. If that doesn't tell you what you need to know, then you don't understand the way food works. And if you love Panda Express, I also love Panda Express. I would like options of better Chinese food.
Yeah.
But that there are times that you want to sit down and have a really, really, really good hamburger and a really good thing of fries. And yes, I know we still have to do our hamburger episode. I just keep waiting on it because it's going to be one that I will be obsessed over and probably annoy everybody more than I already do regularly. There are times when you can justify spending $10 on a really good hamburger.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then there are other times, the majority of the other times, where it's just like, yeah, I'll just grab a burger at such and such fast food place.
Right.
And you still like it. It still tastes good. Like, I still enjoy eating Big Macs occasionally. They still have their own unique flavor.
Yeah.
I miss still to this day a burger from Jack in the Box from way back in the day, the bacon cheeseburger, where they had crumbled bacon on the bottom bun and with the mayonnaise.
That's right. Oh my God, that was amazing.
I mean, I ordered it without cheese because American cheese, yuck, whatever. We've had this discussion. But the crumbled bacon on the bottom that's just sitting on the mayonnaise there, that's just every bite. Because normally when you have bacon on a burger, you get like some pieces of bacon. Sometimes you get a bite and you have a big old piece of bacon. Sometimes it's just like a little sliver. This gave you crumbled bacon in every single bite.
Fantastic.
But it was also still a Jack in the Box burger. So if you took that burger next to, say, at the same time I was eating that, I was eating a burger at a little tiny train car place. It was literally an old train car that was turned into a diner, and it was the definition of a greasy spoon diner. The cook is in there with this big flat top griddle, making everything on the same flat top griddle,
mm-hmm.
and smoking cigarettes, chain smoking cigarettes while he's flipping burgers and stuff. This expect a greasy spoon to be something that would never exist nowadays,
right?
But back in the day, this was like, I'm talking just back in the 90s, mid 90s, late 90s. This was the spot to go to. That you'd get a burger from this place that literally you'd pile napkins underneath both of your elbows, set your elbows on the table, and start eating this thing, knowing that all of the grease and juice and everything was just going to be dripping down your arms. And if that's not what you're looking for, then fine, go get yourself a dry, nasty burger that doesn't have the most amazing flavor ever. This thing was just an amazing burger. Sadly, in a forest fire in September of 1997, the place ended up burning down, and never was replaced. The guy didn't have any way to. I mean, he was just keeping the door open every day.
Oh man,
with that place, because it was up in the woods in the middle of nowhere. So, but one of the best burgers I've ever had in my entire life. Probably the best single burger so far I've had in my life.
Oh man, just
a great burger. And so, again, at the same time as, you know, both these things existed in my food eating at the same time, you know, the burger from Jack in the Box with the bacon on the bottom, mm-hmm. this wonderful burger from the Whistle Stop Cafe. I was eating them at roughly the same time. So did they compare? Not really. The one from Whistle Stop was way, way better. But if I was in town and wanting to get the burger, I couldn't go get the Whistle Stop because it was, you know, not in town. It was out in the woods. So I'll get that Jack in the Box burger. That's pretty damn good burger for Jack in the Box.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? See the difference? Anyway. So Panda is good if you're okay with dealing with Chinese fast food and not like real good Chinese food. So, and I like it. Yeah. I enjoy myself some Panda. I know you enjoy yourself some Panda.
Yeah.
We have had Panda together before.
We have.
That's not a sexual reference, just so people, it could be, but it's not.
I mean, no, we have not.
But anyway, yes, we're having Panda brought to us because of what happened throughout this weekend. And I'm glad you've been paying more attention to the news, because I really haven't had the opportunity to. I got to watch a little bit of football, luckily, because today it's Monday, of course, as we like to do. We record our shows on Monday, show them on Thursday, or put them out on Thursday, whatever. Mm-hmm. In fact, I actually am hoping to watch some football today, because my team is actually playing tonight.
Nice.
On Monday Night Football. I thought they might have a chance to win, but then they mentioned that today was Terrell Owens' birthday. Mm. And yeah, we're going to lose now. Anytime they talk about T.O. on game day, we're going to lose. I hate that guy. Anyway, you were working this weekend, right?
I did work this weekend, yes.
You did. You were working this weekend. Okay. You're working this weekend. And did you see a lessening of people coming in, or was it still a pretty heavy flow of people coming in?
It's been a relatively heavy-ish flow of people. Actually, funny enough, so I left with my wife when we went out going grocery shopping yesterday. I had Sunday off, but I did work Friday and Saturday. And to preface with everyone here, I worked.
Okay.
So I have been out of a job since March. Like, I had three jobs, and all of them went under. And one of them was a retail job. I know we've talked about this, but I was brought back to work. So this last weekend I worked, and throughout the middle of the week, one or two days, I also worked. And it has been very tough, because it's not knowing and understanding what's happening, especially medically right now, is an extra added stress. Like, I cannot fathom the amount of pressure and the amount of stress and just all of the other incredibly... just insane things that this country's medical staff is going through. Because me, I'm essentially just a frontline retail worker. I don't work in a small shop. I work in a big one. I work in a chain. And I am getting overwhelmed by people showing up. If I feel like there's too many people in the building, I start getting anxiety problems. If somebody is standing too close to me, or is... You know, if they're not wearing a mask properly, at the very least, I am starting to get obsessive over keeping my hands clean. Like, there's a lot going on. But one of the major things I noticed was this last weekend, you've got those things to compound. And then what we were talking about earlier is the threat of the stay-at-home order coming into effect throughout this weekend. For some reason, and I hate this so much, for some reason, it kicked up our shopping. Like, everyone started shopping. We, my wife and I ended up doing curbside pickup for every place we possibly could go. But we went and picked up, we pick up rodents. We have pet snakes, so we feed them like rats. And we went to go pick up snake food. And I about had an anxiety attack sitting in the car because my wife went in. But the place that we went to was a small ma-and-pa shop. They don't even run air conditioning. They're just running fans everywhere and the front door open because that's all they could do. But the entire parking lot for this whole place, every spot was filled. It was actually overfilled to the point where I had to park in an alleyway next to the building. And just that in itself gave me so much anxiety. And I think it was because, more than anything, the threat of the stay-at-home order. That people weren't able to go out and do these things afterwards. So they all just kind of crammed out in droves.
But here's the
thing. At the same time.
Here's the thing about that, though. Here's the thing that these people are still flipping forgetting is that the stay-at-home order does not mean you can't go to the store. It does not mean that you can't go and get the essential items that you need, even for your pets. It just means don't go out in restaurants. Don't go lollygagging in stores, shopping for whatever. Don't go to parks. Don't go to do all that other stupid stuff. Just go get your crap, get home. Don't mess around. It does not mean you can't go get your stuff.
Right, exactly. That's what it really actually kind of freaked me out. It felt extremely similar to when the whole thing started, when the first stay-at-home order kicked in, when San Francisco got shut down originally, and then all of a sudden the rest of the state starts going, the whole weekend, everyone at the same time decided to go to Winco, or they decided to go to Walmart, or they decided to go to XYZ.
All of the frozen foods
and the toilet paper
foods and all of the toilet paper. And yes, it happened again.
It happened. Yes, it did.
People went on the freak out and it happened again. Let me tell you something, people, again, that we only have so many people listening. Hopefully more will be, but what it comes down to is, again, I will reiterate, the lockdown order does not mean that you can't go to the stores. The stores will still have people working.
Yeah.
That means you can still go into the stores. You have to be able to go get food. You have to be able to go get your medications. You have to be able to do these things. So they're not closing them down. They're just saying only go do this. Don't go necessarily do your Christmas shopping right at this moment. Try to do that part online.
Yeah.
But go get your milk. Go get your eggs. You don't have to, because what happens is when you go out and do all of this bulk buying of all this stuff, you actually make it so that people have to go back to the store more often trying to find when those items are going to be in stock again, because you idiot people went and hoarded all of it. The only time you are not allowed to leave your house to go to the stores to get the things you need are when somebody in your family or in your household has been diagnosed with COVID and you are put on quarantine by the health department.
Yeah.
And trust me, I know about this. Now you're probably going to wonder, why do I know about this, right? I know you know, Mike, right?
I do.
But I'm going to tell everybody else. Because last week...
Hold on one second. Before you say it, I just want to compliment you because that transition was brilliant.
Thank you. I try.
Yes. Okay, now let's continue.
Last week, a member of my household... Having gone to the ER for other, did get administered a COVID test and did test positive for COVID-19. So, for all those people that any kind of thing that have those situations where any kind of thing that comes up, be it a disease or be it poverty or be it anything where they have no sympathy and no understanding until it's happened to them, somebody that they know it's happened to. Well, first of all, I'm not those people because I have sympathy from the very beginning. It doesn't make a difference whether it happens to me or not. But anybody that knows me that's one of those people, guess what? Somebody that you know has had it in their household. So start having some freaking sympathy if you don't already. That's one. Okay? It's the first point I want to make here.
Okay.
Second, even if you are like me and have constantly had sympathy for it and constantly have worried about it, it's a thing that messes with your head. It really, really does. You're talking about it messing with your head, just having the number of people in buildings. Mm-hmm. Once you find out that somebody in your household has been diagnosed with the thing that is causing this global pandemic, and that is really putting a halt to the entire year of 2020, it makes it so that any little thing that you feel, you start to get paranoid. If you weren't paranoid before, every time you got a cough that, oh my gosh, I have to worry about whether I have COVID or not. Now you're really paranoid when you have it in your house. Mm-hmm. So it's something that, as we see the increase in the numbers, and of course with the holiday season and with the panic of they're going to close us down again, we see the increased people outdoors. And some of them are wearing masks, right? I know you were.
Yeah.
I know you were wearing masks. And yeah. I know your wife was wearing masks. Mm-hmm. In fact, if I know you two, you were also wearing gloves.
We aggressively sanitized. We were not wearing gloves, but we definitely weren't. You did the sanitize
afterwards.
Yeah. Okay.
They're wearing the masks. And the masks do help. The masks make it so it does not spread as quickly. But I do want to caution you all, even when you're wearing the masks and even when you're following the protocols, it is still possible for your family or somebody in your family, for you, it is still possible to contract any of these diseases, but specifically, it is still possible to contract COVID-19. I don't want people to be overly scared about it. I just want you to understand that, yes, even taking the protocols, it's still possible. Now, does that mean you shouldn't follow the protocols because it might happen anyway? No. And you know why I want to say that? Because my wife and I, who are the ones that that do the shopping for the household, are the only ones that have really left. The only time the person who was diagnosed, which I will relate who that is. It is my wife's grandmother who lives in the house. We've mentioned her a few times on the show here. She was the one that was sick, and she was the one that went to the hospital and has COVID-19. The only time she left the house was to go to doctor's appointments. That's all she did. No stores, nothing else. Just to see your doctor at a doctor's office that screened every person before they went in the door to make sure that you didn't show any symptoms or signs before they let you in the door. You know, they were taking your temperature. They were asking you a bunch of questions. You have to be fully masked the entire time. Everybody in the facility is fully masked the entire time. If you're not masked, they have armed security that will remove you. I mean, we're talking security people at doctor's offices with guns, not like tasers or pepper spray, guns.
Jesus.
That's how serious this level is. I'll tell you about the hospital, sir. But that's the only time the grandmother was out of the house, is to go to doctor's appointments. My wife and I, to do shopping, grocery shopping for the household. We tried to go out a total of twice a week to do grocery shopping. My kids, not been back to school at all since March of this year. Not been back to school at all. They have left the house. Each one of them has left the house maybe three times. Again, all doctor's appointments. They have not been in any stores. They've not been with any friends. We talked about my son celebrating his 18th birthday, 2 weeks ago, right?
Yeah, yeah.
No one was there. We didn't invite a single person to my son's 18th birthday. We knew it's not safe to have family gatherings. Of course, a week later, everybody's having family gatherings at Thanksgiving because they don't want to lose their Thanksgiving this year, even though we have a pandemic raging. Well, the grandmother's symptoms started a couple of days before Thanksgiving.
Oh, man.
And culminated in her being so incoherent, she has expressed to us in the last few days that she does not remember anything that happened that day.
My goodness.
Nothing at all. We've told her about things. She's like, yeah, I don't remember that happening. I don't remember that happening. When did I get that? I got the tree, right? Yeah. Did it light up? Yes. I don't remember you lighting it up. I'm like, I figured that because after it was lit up, you looked over in that direction and asked me, where are all the lights coming from? And I told you, the tree.
Oh, my goodness.
You just kind of looked at me like I was stupid.
Oh, man.
So that's where this situation is. So... Here's the thing I'm explaining. If you try to say, oh, well, you did all the precautions, you wore the masks, you made sure to keep clean, wash, you know, made sure to sanitize things, only had two people going out and doing stuff. You guys still got it. Yeah. Okay. We did still get it, but we got it in November, not in March, April, May, June, July, August, September, October. it did. Here's the thing. If people had all followed protocols, if we had stayed in when we were supposed to, if we had done the things that we should have been doing for all of these months, it's possible we still don't have it raging as bad as it is. And the numbers on the increase in the way that they're on the increase.
Yeah.
It's possible that we never would have had to worry about this if this country had taken the initiative that countries like Australia and New Zealand and all the Scandinavian countries except for Sweden, who decided that, oh, right, that didn't work. We're sicker than everywhere else right now. Because that is one news story I did read, that Sweden's like, nope, we're locking everything down now because we tried to do herd immunity and that didn't work. There are all these other countries that jumped on this really quickly and were able to stop this from spreading and being a whole year long of putting their country on hold. They also made sure to help their citizens out, but that's a whole nother story that we'll talk about if we ever want to get overly political. But they made sure that they took the proper precautions and protocols, listened to the scientists, followed the rules that they needed to, New Zealand locked the whole country down for 3 weeks, the whole country. Now, admittedly, New Zealand's like the size of California, but still, why couldn't we completely lock down California for 3 weeks? Because the people in this country don't want it to happen. They don't care unless it happens to them.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's still possible to get COVID-19, even if you take all the precautions.
Yeah.
But look at how long it took for that to happen. It took months and months and months. If we had all of the citizens of California, all of the citizens of the United States, we had all taken the proper precautions from the beginning,
mm-hmm.
we may not still be in the middle of this here, and my family may not have gotten this.
Yeah.
So that does not mean you stop taking the precautions. It doesn't mean for us, now that we've had somebody in the household positive, that we stop taking the precautions. We still take the precautions, not just for us, but for every other person that we eventually, when we are allowed to leave our home again, we eventually encounter. Because yeah. what it comes down to is this, that's what this is about. This is about caring for all of us in this country so that have more people getting sick that didn't have to if we had taken care of this.
Yeah.
That's where I look at this now is my wife's grandmother got sick because this country didn't take care of this. Not because I didn't do the proper protocol. I did. My yeah. wife did. She exactly. did. We didn't let her go anywhere. She's still mad that the biggest trip that she's had in the last year has been to go to the hospital twice.
Mm-hmm.
Although I don't know how much she remembers of the first time at the hospital. But that's the biggest thing that she's done all year because we don't let her go anywhere. We make her stay and not do anything precisely because we make sure that she's safe.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Again, the masks do help. They hold it off for as long as possible.
Yeah.
Just because one family does get it with the mask doesn't mean that you don't need to wear them. Now, we're going to take a break because what I'm going to do after the break is I'm going to tell you the whole timeline of events. And the reason I'm going to tell you is I can say for certain that for the first so many days that she was likely sick, we had no idea whatsoever that it was even possible that she could have had COVID. Because again, we've not been in contact with anybody that has COVID and her experience was with it. So that if you see some of these same signs and think to yourself right now, maybe it's not COVID. I don't think it is COVID. Don't lull yourself into complacency. Pay attention. Just because, and admittedly, just because her signs are one thing doesn't mean that the person that you love might be the same or whatever.
Yeah.
But still, the more stories that we can tell about the experiences, the more people maybe can pay attention. So
yeah.
We're going to take a break.
Okay.
And we'll be right back to hear the tale of Martha's COVID-19.
Cool, man.
Back in a minute.
Hey, friends. This is Mike from the Xennial Chronicles reminding you to subscribe to our YouTube channel. You can also follow us on Twitter and Facebook at Zenchron, spelled X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N, to keep up to date on all things TXC. And please check out our official website, thezennialchronicles.com, or if that's too much to type, zenchron.com. Thanks again for listening, and now back to the show.
And we're back, everybody.
All right.
Before I get full bore into this tale about what happened with Martha, the grandmother in residence in the household here. I want to play a little game with you, sir.
Okay.
And you know how I like to have, even with serious subjects, I like to have a tiny bit of levity in sure. situations.
Sure.
Okay. So I'm going to ask you some trivia questions. Okay.
Okay.
It's Monday, December 7th, when we're doing this.
Yes.
December 7th, which is, it will live in infamy, right?
Yes. Yes, it will.
Because, of course, it's Pearl Harbor Day.
Yeah, it's the attack on Pearl Harbor.
Yeah. Do you have any idea how many people died on Pearl Harbor Day?
I do not. Actually, I do not have the... I don't know the numbers.
Do you want to throw out a guess?
I would say, man, it was a military base. It was a heavy-handed attack. I don't know, maybe... I'm going to keep it on the low, like maybe 2,500.
That's actually not a bad guess, sir.
Okay.
It's not a bad guess at all.
Oh,
2,403 people.
Wow. I actually wasn't that far off. Holy shit.
No, that's pretty, that's not a bad guess. 2,403 people died at Pearl Harbor, which of course, propelled the United States into World War II.
Yes.
Which lasted from 1941 to 1945. Mm-hmm. Do you have a rough idea how many American soldiers died during World War II?
American soldiers?
Yeah, Americans died during World War II.
I would say over the four-year period?
We didn't have any civilian casualties because the war, other than right. Pearl Harbor, the war never came to our country.
I'm going to say, 15,000?
Far more than that.
See, I don't know the actual casualties of Americans in World War II. Many people that died, but I wasn't sure how many of them were Americans because we were so late in the game when we started.
Yeah, I mean, and when you compare American numbers to, say, like Russian numbers, it's really funny.
Yeah, it's kind of a different story.
Yeah, because Russian numbers is like 25 million, maybe.
Oh my God, I'm not entirely
sure. Again, and we've discussed it before when we discussed spam.
Yeah.
The way that Russia won, the way that Russia beat Germany and actually Japan, because they did. People only want to think about the United States beating Japan with dropping the two bombs,
right?
But in fact, Russia invaded the area of China that Japan had been occupying and basically wiped them out in a single day.
Whoa!
Yeah, we don't talk about that here because we don't want to talk about Russians doing anything good. The Russian method to win their battles in World War II was just literally to keep throwing people at the battle. They had so many people involved, at least every other country in Asia and Europe involved in the war, that they just, all right, the Germans have better equipment. That's fine. We will just keep throwing people at you. And eventually, you may kill like three times as many of us, but that still means we win because we have like 10 times as many people as you do.
Right.
So that's all right. We'll just, you have machines of war. We have people here. Have some more people. The U.S. Casualties for World War II, 291,557.
Good Lord.
So less than 300,000 over a four-year span. Okay. Over a four-year span.
Okay.
Now, admittedly, this 2,403 people that died in a single day there at Pearl Harbor, that was enough to engage us in 4 years of war, billions and billions of dollars, the dropping of two death machine bombs. First of all, the creation of two death machine bombs, but then the dropping of them, annihilating populations unheard of by a single attack. Again, of the just American casualties only, 291,557. So a little under 300,000.
Yeah.
This inspired a whole shift in the United States, this one day of 2,403 people dying. And it ranks in U.S. history as one of the two most important days where some foreign influence attacked us in some way. Here it was in Pearl Harbor, it was Japan. In this other instance, this other day where we were attacked, it was not a country. It was an ideological group, basically, that attacked us, a terrorist organization that attacked us. And, of course, I'm referring to?
9/11.
Exactly. Do you know how many people died on 9/11?
I believe it was around 3,000.
2,977. So again, your numbers are good. Your numbers.
I remember 9/11 as far as the numbers, because that just like, I remember that blew my head off. Like just the concept of it was just insane.
Well, I'm thinking about the fact. Think about the fact. That's pretty close to the number that died at Pearl Harbor: 2,403, 2,977. And this again inspired decades long terror, war on terror.
Yep.
Multiple decades of a war on terror.
Yeah.
Military actions in multiple countries. No official declaration of war in any of these things.
Right.
But military act, because you can't declare war against a. I mean, they tried to declare war against terrorism, but it's not like terrorism has a specific geographical location.
Right.
You can't really declare war on something that's not a country. So.
Right.
I mean, look at the war on drugs. And that one, guess what? Y'all lost that one, people. But this inspired also so many changes in the way that we did everything in our day-to-day lives. It inspired the way you get on an airplane. It inspired the way you're able to you know, use your internet browser and use your cell phones. Guess what, everybody? If they want to, the NSA can listen to anything that they want to on yours. I'm not trying to go all conspiracy theory on you, but literally the Patriot Act gives them the capability to, if they think that you are a national security threat, to tap into any kind of media that you use to try to make sure that you are not a security threat and you're not going to harm, you know, political figures, basically anything. You're not going to be able to harm anything by, you know, what you're doing. It gives them the opportunity to do that. It technically, the Patriot Act gives the U.S. government the opportunity to arrest you without formally charging you and hold you indefinitely if you are a suspected terrorist.
Yeah.
Now, there is gray area in how they have to say that you're a suspected terrorist, but they literally can suspend all of your rights if they think that you are a suspected terrorist.
Yeah.
And hold you indefinitely without legal representation. Yep. You are no longer afforded any of the rights of a legal U.S. citizen, or, funny enough, most people don't realize that technically any citizen that's not a U.S. citizen while on U.S. soil is actually afforded the rights of all U.S. citizens, because it says so in the Constitution. Discussion for another day.
Yeah, point being, I did not know that.
Point being, all of those things were inspired by 9/11. All of them.
Yeah.
That's the reaction to 3,000 people dying in a day. Again, the reaction to 2,500 people dying in a day was a four-year war where 291,000 Americans were killed in that war, and countless many others. Ugh. And billions of dollars in both of these instances, billions and billions of dollars into military research, military building, contractors. There are businesses and families that have made huge fortunes on both World War II and 9/11 from all of the technology that was pushed into production and made and done for military purposes to try to combat the threats in both of those scenarios. Okay.
Yeah.
Millions and millions and millions of dollars. Government threw money at people like crazy in those instances. When I said earlier I wasn't paying attention to the news, I wasn't entirely truthful. I wasn't paying attention to California news. I was paying attention to other news, of course. And the news that came out on December 3rd. And December 3rd is an important day. I want to keep that one in mind for later, okay?
Okay.
December 3rd is an important day.
Okay.
For the story I'm about to tell about the grandmother in the house. But on December 3rd, the United States posted the highest single-day total of COVID-19 deaths. The highest single day since this whole thing started. Do you know what that number was?
No, I don't. I know it was over 2,000.
So we have 2,403 from Pearl Harbor, right?
Yeah.
We have 2,977 from 9/11. Both of these incidents sparked years-long military conflicts, billions of dollars into military contractors building things, huge changes in the way that we have our country, that our country runs and exists, right?
Yeah.
and the government just spending money left and right to take care of these things for all those years. 2,800 people died on December 3rd in the United States from COVID-19 complications. 2,800 in a single day. The same amount that on or close enough to the same amount that on 9/11 spurred decades of terror, a terror war. The same amount that spurred a four-year involvement, I should say, of Americans in war in Europe and Asia.
Jesus.
2,800 in a single day. The total right now is somewhere close to 283,000 COVID deaths in the United States.
Yeah.
In the United States.
Yeah.
That's what? 8,000 less than World War II. So by the end of this year, before the whole COVID crisis comes a full year circle here in the United States, it will be more people dead from COVID than what died in World War II. We're told to remember Pearl Harbor, day that lives in infamy. We're told to never forget 9/11. But on December 3rd, 2,800 people died from COVID. Is anybody else going to remember that day? Is that going to be even close to the memory of something like Pearl Harbor and 9/11? The numbers are close enough. One single thing caused that many deaths, just like on Pearl Harbor, just like on 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
But is that going to be remembered? Well, for me, it will be.
Yeah.
And that's where the story comes in. So I'm going to take you back a little ways. Okay.
Okay.
I'm going to take you back to November, specifically November, right around the 17th or so. No, earlier than that. I'm sorry. Going to go back a little bit. No, yeah, I'm sorry, I was right. The 17th of November. The grandmother in the house, her name is Martha. She is my wife's grandmother. She's a lovely addition to the house the majority of the time. The rest of the time, like everybody else in the house, they're all a pain in my ass at some point or another. It's just the way it works. Everything kind of runs through that.
Right.
She would, by the way, if you were to ask her, she would say the exact same thing about me, that I am nothing but a pain in the ass. In fact, that's wrong. She doesn't say I'm a pain in the ass. She calls me a horse's ass all the time. I am constantly a horse's ass with everything I say.
Well, I mean, I would expect that. I would expect no less from proper family members.
Yeah. Yeah. I know that you've met her a few times.
Yes.
But I know that you're not necessarily super knowledgeable of her. You haven't hung out, you know.
No. But she's always, wait, what?
Nothing. Nothing. Moving on. No, she does not do that for anybody listening. But around the 17th, she had a doctor's appointment. It's one of her regular ones that she has to have. She has a specific condition where she has to go to a doctor's office at regular intervals to get checked on the levels of things in her blood. This is just one of her regular things that she has to do. She's had this problem for the majority of her life. It is a genetic problem that her mother had as well. In fact, was part of the reason for her mother's passing. So it's something that we pay very close attention to make sure everything is right in this.
Right.
And this is the only reason she's been leaving the house, was to go and get these things done. This specific style of, you know, check. Well, while she's out there getting the check, she gets her annual flu shot. She has a couple of health issues that, first of all, her age is such that they recommend she has a flu shot every year.
Okay.
Her specific other medical things, her long-term conditions, like she's diabetic, I can share that much at least. So they recommend that people that are diabetic, you go get your flu shot, especially if you're an old person with diabetes, go get your flu shot, because for people that are diabetic, it's a little harder to fight off the flu. So you get your flu shot. Now, every year when she gets a flu shot and she makes it a point, I joke with her every single year. Oh, you got your flu shot. You're confined to your room for the next, 3 days. You're on quarantine for 3 days. This is literally a joke I tell her every single year. And sure enough, every year, right after she gets her flu shot, usually about 3 or 4 days after she gets her flu shot, she gets a little bit of a stomach ache, a little bit of a runny nose. So she shows a little bit of effects from it. But it's like a day or two that she has that, and then it's done. It's over. You know what I mean?
Right.
So this is on the 17th of November. She has that. On the 24th of November, a week later, Okay.
Okay.
We're advancing week. We're right before Thanksgiving is supposed to happen.
Uh-huh.
She has a bad day where she's not feeling well. She's super nauseous. She throws up a couple of times. Oh, doesn't really want to keep any food down. Not feeling good at all. So our thought initially is
the flu shot.
Okay. It's a little late, but she's reacting to the flu shot. She's got to be. And we everybody in the household tells her, listen, this happens to you every year. You have a reaction to the flu shot. She's like, okay, you're probably right. The next day, she's still feeling really nauseous, doesn't want to eat too much, doesn't drink a whole lot. Thanksgiving comes up. She does eat a normal plate of food at Thanksgiving like she normally would, you know, standard Thanksgiving fare, but doesn't have dessert, which is a little weird for her. But all right, fine. Her last couple of days, she had a stomach ache, so whatever. She's getting her stomach back resettled. We get it. The next day, of course, is when we do our awesome, amazing Thanksgiving leftover egg rolls. She was ready to have that for dinner, had some of that with us for dinner. So that worked out good, right? Everybody's enjoying that. But you get into Saturday and Sunday, and she's still not feeling good. Still has stomach upset. Still, you know, not the best.
So this is going a while.
It's going a while. It's starting to become a little bit like, okay.
Sounds like a bit more of a long haul than your standard flu shot, huh?
Yeah, maybe she's got a little stomach bug. So we're trying to make sure she's eating properly, she's drinking properly. Monday, she feels a little bit better. Get into Tuesday, and Tuesday, she's not wanting to eat at all. She doesn't want to, she can't really get up to walk around, which she's a little bit wobbly on her feet to begin with. I personally believe it's an inner ear imbalance she's had since back when she was a teenager. She actually had a really bad accident she was in and had to, mess some stuff up in her neck and with her spine. She had to wear a collar for a couple of months because, I mean, of course, that was like way back in the day where they didn't have a lot of the surgeries and the things that they have nowadays to correct those problems a little bit easier. But she's always been a fairly wobbly individual. She could almost be a Weeble if she wanted to be.
As long as she don't fall down, that's fine.
Yeah, well, no, she hasn't done that in a few years, but that used to happen is she would fall down. But Tuesday, and this is the first of December, she's not feeling good at all. There's nothing going right for her. She's sick. She's not wanting to eat. That night we had pot pies for dinner. I believe we did we may have done our last recording that day, if not the Monday before. But we had pot pies for dinner that night, and they were leftover turkey pot pies. This is usually one of her favorite things to eat as well, and she literally just mushed up the pie. Maybe took a bite or two, didn't touch any of it.
Whoa.
And this is the day that she got her Christmas tree decoration. It's like a 14-inch glass Christmas tree decoration. It's got little light bulbs on it. And then there's our little glass things that look like light bulbs. And there's a light in the bottom in the middle of it that illuminates it, makes it look like it's lights on the Christmas tree. There's a little star on top. Cute little Christmas decoration. She had bought this new. She had got it that day. Put it together, plugged it in. She didn't remember it being turned on.
Whoa.
She looked over there after it was lit up. It was lit up and she saw it. And then I'd say 20 minutes later, because she was acting weird, so I didn't want to leave her alone in her room. She looked over at it and she said, "Where are the lights coming from?" And I said, "There's a light in the bottom. Don't you remember?" She just kind of looked at me blankly. So there's some major issues going on. She wasn't understanding anything. She wasn't remembering anything. And again, this is on Tuesday the 1st. So we're like, you know what? This is too worrisome for us. This is not a situation we're comfortable with. We're going to take her into the ER to have her looked at because this has gone on for too many days. It seems like she is super dehydrated, possibly a little malnourished because she wasn't eating and she really wasn't drinking. We're going to take her in. We're going to have her checked out. So around 10 o'clock at night, a little after 10 o'clock at night, I get her to the hospital. Now, to the ER, obviously. Now, this is where things get fun and interesting. And this is where I want people to try to, you've heard about this, but I'm going to give you the firsthand account of what happens right now when you go to the ER for anything. Okay. Anything at all. They have signs out front, of course, if you've been in contact with COVID, don't come in, call this number, yada, yada. They have another sign that says the only people that are allowed visitors. OB area, the pregnancy area, you know, the delivery area, you can have one visitor. Pediatrics, you can have one visitor. End of life area, you can have one visitor.
Good Lord.
Only one person allowed in at a time. And pediatrics, you kind of, oftentimes you need a parent in there with the kids. So that's kind of necessary. So I get her in the front door. I get her to the beginning triage screening. They take her basic vitals, get her basic information, and say, all right, now we're going to take her back and do the rest. You get to go wait out in the parking lot or go home or do whatever you want to, and we'll get in touch with you when we need to.
Oh, my God.
That's it. That's all you get. Now, normally, when I, for the last 8 years, since Martha has lived in the same household as me and my wife, and that happened because a little over 8 years ago, Martha's husband passed away from, sadly, he had stage 4 cancer, of course, didn't find out till he only had about 6 months left to live. And so when he passed away, at that point, he had kind of made it clear to us that we needed to keep an eye on Martha and look after her after he was gone. And that ended up being us all moving into a house together. In fact, we're close to the exact 8-year anniversary of when we actually all did move from, she left her house, we left our house, and we all moved into one big place together. Because we did that, I think it was the 20th of December back in 2012.
Man.
2012 was a weird year. One day, maybe we'll talk about how crazy 2012 was.
okay.
But anyway, I've basically been in charge of Martha's medical care for the majority of that time. The beginning, my wife did it. It's her grandmother, so she did most of it. But it ended up transitioning to me getting her to almost all of her appointments, being involved with almost all the doctors. I'm on all the medical paperwork to talk with things, because oftentimes, I'm sure you've experienced this. When doctors try to talk to patients, they don't always like to give all the information, or they give information in terms that, for somebody who doesn't have medical knowledge, can be a little bit hard to understand.
Yeah.
It's especially hard for seniors because there's a lot of things that they remember being one way, and medical science has changed dramatically throughout their life. I mean, I'll have the grandmother talk to me about something that happened to her back in, you know, the 1980s, and I'll have to remind her. That is still the dark age of medicine. You need to understand, if it's older than 5 years old, the stuff you're working with, it may be dark ages of medicine, and they may have whole entire completely different ways of handling all of that now.
Yeah.
She had to have surgery about 6 years ago on her lungs. And because she had been diagnosed with a type of lung cancer back 6 years ago.
Man.
And she had to have the lower lobe of her right lung removed, because luckily it was the type of cancer that was very slow growing and concentrated just in one specific area. So there was no spreading, and it was only in just the bottom part of her lung. And she had been, back years ago, she had been a smoker for the first half of her life. So it wasn't really surprising that she had lung cancer somewhere. She'd given it up, back in, I think, 1982, 83, she'd given up smoking. So it's been many, many years since she was a smoker, but it doesn't matter. It still did some damage. Luckily, only a small amount, that she only needed a very small surgery. Well, they start talking about the surgery, and it's going to be a laparoscopic surgery. And she's watched medical shows where she's heard the terminology laparoscopic surgery, but she years ago, she had like gallbladder removal surgery and has, you know, a 12-inch scar from where they basically cut the whole side of her body open to remove her gallbladder. And I'm like, no, your granddaughter, my wife, she's had her gallbladder removed. You were there in the hospital with me while she was having her gallbladder removed. You were sitting right there in the waiting room with me. She has like 3 little tiny scars that you have to search to find on her from having it done, because it was all done laparoscopically. I said, seriously, they're going to put like 3 little maybe things in you. They said they were going to do a drainage tube. So you'll have a 1-inch, maybe 1.5-inch scar from the drainage tube later. The other are going to be 3, maybe 4 little tiny scars, 1/2-inch at best.
Yeah.
More like 1/4-inch. Little things. So they're going to put these little things inside of you with cameras. They're going to cut the piece out. They're going to pulverize it, put it in a little baggie, and pull it out of you. She says, really? I said, yeah, that's how it's going to happen. No big scars. But she hears laparoscopic. She has no idea what it is because these are advancements that not all seniors pay attention to or learn about or even care to learn about. So when it comes to most of her medical stuff, I'm right there with her. I'm explaining each thing. I have, before the last year, I had a little bit of medical knowledge just because I gained knowledge about as many things as I possibly can. Over the last year, I've gained more medical knowledge. I know, for instance, in your case, sir, your wife does work on the back end of the medical field, the same type of field that I might be going into at some point. So she has some medical knowledge.
Yeah.
Albeit minor, but she has some medical knowledge. Actually, hers is probably major just because I know her and she's not just going to learn what the books taught her or what she just has to deal with.
Oh,
she's going to learn everything. So I'm pretty sure she's got major medical knowledge because that's who she is.
Yep. Very much so. I'm very happy to have that. I feel like I have a crutch in that with her knowing that. Well, you can explain anything to me.
I was just going to say, we can admit here on the podcast, I'm sure I'm gonna go the full direction admitting this. She's the smarter one in the relationship.
I will agree with you, sir. I will agree with you.
And I love you completely, man. But I mean, it's like saying in my relationship, everybody likes my wife. They just put up with me. I might be the smarter one, but she's the one that people like.
Right.
Because she is far more likable than I am.
Well, we all have, we all have our pros, right?
Yeah. We have our balances.
Yeah. Anyway, we have our balances.
But yeah, so I'm used to being there with her for everything that's going on. She's been in the ER before for different things. And you know, I'm a person that's, I'm the stalwart person. I'm right there in the ER with her as long as I need to be. I don't leave for any reason unless it has something to do with my kids. I'm not leaving. I'm staying there. And if I have to leave for the kids, I get somebody else to sit there and be with her. It's what I was taught to do. It's how I was trained to be when it comes to if somebody's in your household under your care and responsibility, you got to be there 100%. I do it for my wife. I do it for my kids, and she's a part of our household too. So I do it for her. But I can't. So I go sit out in the parking lot for a while, out in my car. I sit out there communicating with her via text, which she was texting me okay, which is really surprising with her mental state. And what she remembered of things, but I don't leave the parking lot until I find out that she's actually, instead of sitting in the waiting room, because I know we talked about before ER experiences and you didn't have a whole lot of ER experiences.
Well, aside from my ER experience this summer, that just scared the living daylights out of me.
That's the only one you've really had a major one of. The biggest thing about ERs is you sit around forever in the ER waiting room until they finally put you into a room.
Yeah.
And then you get to sit around in the room forever until you're sitting there and suddenly, all right, we're ready to get you out of here. And then they get you out the door as quickly as possible after you've been sitting forever.
Yep.
It's like, wait, there's no like cool down and discussion. No, we're good. You're out. We'll tell you this little bit, sign a few pieces of paper. Bye-bye.
It's super weird. It is. Part is super weird, but I understand they're at work, man. They're like, they got to get one person off the line and get another one in because it's a constant flow.
And so and especially right now with all the
right? Yes, crazy. Definitely.
So initially they gave her some antibiotics because she was her biggest complaint was the nausea, but also the incoherence. And again, I told them before they told me to you know, get out of there. I told them, listen, we think she's really dehydrated because she hasn't really been eating or drinking. And she's not all there in her head right now. So they get her some antibiotics. They're thinking infection of some kind, right?
Right.
Because they ask all the questions. They also ask, have you been in contact with anybody that has a case of COVID? Not that we are aware of. That's literally the answer. Not that we are aware of. We can't say no because we can't be 100% sure.
Right, of course. That's impossible.
We answer, not that we are aware of. Unless you like live up in the woods and haven't come in contact with anybody. Your answer should be not that we're aware of.
Yeah, absolutely.
Again, I go out in the parking lot. And I will admit, the first hour or so, I didn't even go sit in the car. I could still see her for the first hour while they were doing some of the basic triage stuff on her.
Yeah.
And I actually was standing outside the window watching to see what they were doing with her. because I worry. This is somebody that's important to our household. This is my wife's grandmother. She lives with us. If something were to happen to her, you know, I've talked about this before that I have issues sometimes when you have friends, family, whatever, and they pass away. I have issues that you have some of these people that have never had contact with the person while they were alive, or had very limited contact while they were alive, treated them like garbage, or just didn't pay attention to them. And then they want to act like it's their big loss when the person is gone.
Yes.
And it's even in the sense of, it could be the person, it could be, you know, somebody's kid that's lost, or somebody's parent that's lost, and they haven't talked to that parent in, you know, 15 years, except for maybe once. So they haven't seen the parent in 15 years. Maybe they've talked to them, you know, once a month or something.
Yeah.
And they act like it's their whole world completely destroyed. I can't live in a world without my mom/dad/whatever, and have no understanding towards the person who lived with that person and whose life has changed on a daily basis.
Yeah.
You know, I've seen people where somebody like the grandparent will die, and you have grandkids that are freaking out about it. They will only see the grandparent again once a month or on holidays, and are completely neglecting the other grandparent who has to wake up in the morning with somebody not in the bed with them, who has to get up and go have their breakfast by themselves now, because that person isn't there anymore. Has to get in the shower and see that person's shampoo bottle and soap, and open the cabinets and see their medicine and their razors or whatever. You know, I remember having that feeling when my mother passed away. I had the first moment of, oh my gosh, my mom is gone. What am I going to do? And then I thought, I had that moment, and then I'm like, who cares what I'm going to do? I still have my wife and my kids, and I'm going to live my life normal. What the hell is my dad going to do? He just lost the other half of himself. And then, of course, 2 days, not even 2 days later, I had to worry about what my sister was going to do, because she found out a day after our mother passed away that she was pregnant with her first kid. And again, my thing was, oh my God, she has to deal with not being able to tell her mom that she just got pregnant with her first kid. How just fucked up is that?
Whoa.
And both me and my wife went into, what do you need us to do for you mode? Because that's just the most fucked up thing to ever happen.
Yeah.
It's just so, so wrong. Again, 2012 was a messed up year.
Yeah.
But anyway, you know, it's the effect of, if something is to happen to Martha, this affects us on a day-to-day basis. This affects my kids who see her every single day and would suddenly have a void in their life. This affects me and my wife who make meals for her and make sure that she gets her medications on time when she needs them. And we do her laundry. We, you know, all these different things that are part of our regular routine that are suddenly gone in a blink. And so you have that worry, you have that panic, you have that this person is important to me every single day of my life. And so, you know, I need to make sure she's okay. So I was pacing outside the ER watching them do stuff. I saw that they took her in the area of the triage where they do the EKG. And I'm like, okay, well, she was talking about having nausea, maybe having some stomach pains. Here's a lesson, because again, we had a similar discussion back in when we talked about your ER visit. With women, when they are having nausea and stomach pains, those can actually be signs of heart attacks for them. Women's heart attack presents with different signs and symptoms than what men's do. Why? I don't know. It's something physiological. But pain in the stomach area and nausea, if you have an irregular heartbeat or your heart's beating too fast, and they'll do that, you know, initially when they check your pulse and oxygen and whatnot, that can be an indicator of a woman having a heart attack.
Whoa.
So they hooked her up for an EKG. And as they were hooking her up for the EKG, I'm looking at it going, why are they doing an EKG? And then I'm like, oh, I'm connecting the dots. They're going to rule this out as a possibility. Because as you learned,
yes,
they do the EKG to rule it out. If your EKG is good, they can leave you sitting in the waiting room and not have to worry about you keeling over and dying and them being sued.
Right. Yeah. It means they could take their time to find out what's going on.
Exactly. All they got to do is stick a bunch of stickies to you, run a machine. Okay, your heart's doing its normal rhythm. It's not looking goofy. So you're not having a heart attack. So we can go sit you off and off to the side.
Yep.
So they sit her off to the side in the waiting room. This is about, we're at about 11 o'clock at this point. I go sit in the car. Once I can't see her anymore, I go sit in the car. I'm in the car till about 2:30 in the morning. I'm a good boy. I don't turn the car on and help destroy, the environment with a car sitting there and the exhaust going. I also don't want to destroy my car because guess what, people? If you sit in one spot with your motor running so that you can run your heater or your air conditioner during the summer because you're, too much of a snowflake to deal with what the temperature is, you're actually destroying your car's engine. Your car's engine is not designed to just sit there like that, not moving with all of the heat gathering underneath it. The movement of the car helps to disperse the heat because you have a gigantic piece of metal that has little tiny explosions happening in it over and over and over again. It is causing wear and tear every time you use it, but specifically if you sit it in one spot and let it keep just getting hot, crap's going to warp and you're motor is eventually not going to work anymore. So all of you entitled soccer moms that sit around in your SUVs and your vans in front of the school with your car still running so you can crank your AC because you don't want to be sweaty, y'all are idiots and stupid, and I hope someday you learn your lesson. I wish to hope more worse things, but I'm not in that mood right now. So I at 2:30, I find out that she is finally going into a room. Now, keep in mind also, you know me. So I'm wearing a pair of shorts and a sweatshirt. Mm-hmm. And so I'm freezing my ass off.
Yep.
Because I don't own pants really anymore. I own some jeans that I wore to school, but I don't like wearing those. So I'm freezing. 2:30, she says she's finally getting into a room. Well, that means she'll be in a bed, not sitting in a wheelchair somewhere. So I feel better about that. I go home, which is a bit of a drive. Go home, try to get a little bit of rest. I told her, send me messages when you find something out. Well, I get a message. They did a COVID test. Okay, fine. Let me know what happens with it. A couple hours later, I get another message. They say I have COVID. What?
Oh, shit.
And my response, my little response back to her is, how the hell did that happen?
Yeah.
Her response back to me, you tell me. Like, I have no idea. So I luckily they have numbers set up for you to be able to call the nurses and talk to the nurses and find out information since you can't be in there anymore. They've tried to set up a situation where you can, if you're a loved one trying to get information, if you're somebody that's normally there supporting your family member, you have ways to get information.
Yeah.
So and they've given me the number. So I call up the nurse. I'm like, yeah, this is Martha's grandson. What the heck is going on here? And she's like, well, yeah, they did a COVID test and she tested positive for COVID. So she has COVID. I'm like, what? They're giving her IV fluids and stuff because she was extremely dehydrated. Okay. And then they're going to keep doing blood tests on her. At this point, the nausea and all that is probably caused from her having COVID. I'm like, okay. They did a chest x-ray as well. At this point, there's nothing alarming on the chest x-ray. It looks like things are fine, but we'll see what they're going to do. Are they going to admit her and keep her? I don't know at this point. This is at like 4:30 in the morning. I'm like, all right.
Oh, no. My God.
Can you just, you have my number. Can you give me a call if anything changes, anything's happening? Let me know what's going on. About an hour later, I get a call from the hospital pharmacy, which I told them they could call me because I'm not really sleeping very well because I'm worried as all hell, especially now. Because I then go,
right.
I then have to go back to bed. I got out of bed to take the phone call. I go back to bed and I'm like, hey, boss. Because I call the wife boss because she is. I say, hey, boss, I need you to wake up. She wakes up. She's like, what? Nanny has COVID-19. What the hell are you talking about? She has COVID-19. How is that possible? I don't know. Why y'all thinking I know? So, pharmacy for the hospital calls. I give them the information they need on all of her medications. And I'm like, again, I'm talking to her. She becomes a little more coherent. She hasn't been able to sleep at all. She's been getting tons of fluid. She's feeling better.
Good.
Then early in the morning, early in the morning of the second. So we're on the second now, right?
Yes.
Second Wednesday. I have called to tell my, I've called to tell my kids' schools that we are having no school for the day. My kids will not be in school. I will tell them why later, but we're not having, my kids will not be doing their classroom activities on the computer for the day. It's just not happening. They're like, okay, all right, is everything all right? No, but I can't tell you yet. I will tell you after I have everything more settled and what's going on, because I'm in freak out mode at this point.
Yeah, totally.
So
absolutely.
I'm not sure what to do. Moreover, I'm supposed to go get supplies and stuff at the store today, that day, that the mm-hmm. first. So I'm like, okay. So I get the call from the ER. Hey, she's okay. We're sending her home. Okay. That's weird. Well, we got her some medication for her to not be doing the vomiting and anything like that. The x-rays looked okay. So we've given her some fluids. You just need to monitor her oxygen levels and her temperature. And anything goes weird, you just bring her back. Okay. So I drive to the emergency room. I pick her up. She's her normal self. I mean, when they bring her out the door, the nurse brings her out the door. I figure I'm going to find out if she's back to her normal mental self or not. And so she's brought out the door, and I say to the nurse, no, stop. That's the wrong grandmother. That's the wrong grandmother. And the nurse kind of, I mean, she's wearing a mask, so I can't really. And of course, I'm wearing a mask, so she can't see.
Right, right.
So the nurse is giving me like this quizzical look with her eyes, head cocked slightly to the side, you know, a little bit like a puppy does looking at you.
Right, yeah.
What? And the grandma, I can hear the grandmother with her mask on. I can hear her laughing. And I know she wants to call me a horse's ass, but she's not going to do it in front of the nurse.
Aww.
So I'm like, all right, we're good. And I tell the nurse, I'm just kidding. And I think the grandmother said something about, hey, you know, yeah, you're trying to be funny. I'm like, well, I got to, you know, that's what I do. Get her in the car, get her back home. She says, yeah, I'm feeling pretty good. I'm feeling, you know, I'm not nauseous like that, you know, and she's back to her normal self. So I'm like, all right. This is good. I end up having to make phone calls to all of her family, her daughters, her sister, let them know what's going on.
Right.
They don't like that because, well, some of them like me, some of them don't. It's really weird relationships. Anyway, I don't blame either ones, by the way. I don't blame the ones that like me for liking me. I don't blame the ones that don't like me for not liking me. It's just who I am. I'm polarizing. So she's at home. She's having normal, you know, we're doing normal stuff at home, but we're keeping watch on her that day. We, like I said, we've canceled everything. I call the schools, let them know what's going on so that they're prepared for if I have to cancel any more days of school. Because at this point, we don't know what's going on. I go and I'm like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I haven't heard any official word yet, but I have to go to the store and get the things I have to get. So I leave to go to the store. I'm doing my normal protocol of having mask on, hands clean, all that stuff. I get to the store. I walk inside of Walmart. Not even kidding you. Walk inside of Walmart. I am barely past like the produce section, walking towards the rest of the food section. And all I'm there to do is get, I think I got to get one thing of pet food and then like basic food for us, right? Some stuff, the stuff that we need to get.
Right.
And I get a phone call. And guess what the phone call's from? It's from the state health department.
Whoa.
For the grandmother. Of course, my number is used for almost all of her medical stuff. So
right. My
number was in her medical file. Call comes to me for her telling us that she is on quarantine until such and such date. And everybody in the house is on quarantine until such and such date. And of course, I am in the middle of Walmart. I'm in Walmart. And I've just been told by a state health official, you need to be on quarantine now. And it's like, I kind of knew that was coming, but crap. What do? I have half a cart full of stuff and I need to get this stuff because if I go home and start quarantine, we don't have food. So I'm like, okay, this is the most anxiety filled trip I have ever had in my entire life because I am trying to get to the store and maintain like 10 feet of distance. But I am moving around. I'm waiting at the end of aisles for people to clear out of aisles where normally I would, you know, keep 6 feet distance from them. I don't want to be near anybody because it's like, what if I am freaking Typhoid Mary and I'm carrying this shit through the store, killing everybody? But I have to get the stuff because, like, if I get this stuff, then I can go home and we can stay on lockdown. I have to get all this stuff. I am freaking out.
Oh my God.
I am freaking out completely. some trouble breathing, and then I'm wondering, great, am I having trouble breathing because I'm having an anxiety attack? Or am I having trouble breathing because, fuck, I have COVID? Holy shit. I literally don't know what to think at this point. So I get through the shopping, and I'm like, I'm hating myself for being here because I don't want to be the person that goes out during quarantine and goes shopping. But I have to finish it so that the family has food. So I finish all the shopping, and I'm also getting stuff. One of the major things I'm getting is fluids for the grandmother because she needs to be on clear fluids and drink a bunch of clear fluids to help keep her okay. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, totally.
So I'm trying to get her stuff to make sure she's okay with the COVID thing. I'm like, oh my God. So I get all this stuff. I do a self-checkout because I don't want anybody near me. And at the same time, there was also something online that I had purchased that I also had to pick up that day. A little something we talked about off of air.
Okay. You
know, big Christmas thing.
Yes.
For the boss?
Yeah, of course.
She doesn't listen to this, so it doesn't matter. Anyway, I had to pick that up that day too.
Oh, which, man.
Is the other reason I'm going out. So I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to do that. The lady that kind of roams around the self-checkouts, I ask her, and I'm standing a good more than 6 feet away from her. I ask her, hey, I have this online order. It's a Black Friday online order. Where do I pick it up? Am I picking up this giant orange tower that's at the front of the store? Oh, no, no. And she steps into within like 3 feet of me, and I'm like, why are you doing this? You're going to die. You need to back away from me. I might kill you. Literally, these are the thoughts running in my head. She's like, no, there's a place over by the garden center. You park in these parking spots. They're labeled. And you just, they try to watch and see, but you can call them too. There's a number on that's on the label there. You can call them and they'll get you set up. And I'm slowly inching myself backwards. Oh. Not making it look like I'm trying to take a step backwards. Slowly inching backwards as she's talking to me. I'm like, okay, thank you. And then she keeps wanting to talk to me more and still being close to me. And I'm just like, let me get out of here. And I'm scanning my stuff, trying not to touch anything if I possibly can. And like, I was hoping I had a sweatshirt on so I could cover my fingers with my sweatshirt to touch the numbers on the freaking pin pad, but I couldn't. And I'm like, so I get out. I get everything in my car. I go over to where the thing is. I have them. I was going to have them put it in the back seat for me, but they handed it right to me through my window, which is barely open. So I had to open the window a little more. I was like, what are you doing, people? You need to leave. But I don't want to say anything to them because then, like, I don't want them to freak out and call the cops on me or something. So I get home. And I'm so grateful to be home. I'm like, you know, you see in movies where people are in planes and they're terrified and they land and they get out of the plane and start kissing.
Right. Yeah.
I seriously want to kiss the floor in my house because I'm freaking home. And I'm like, I've never been so paranoid about being out in my life because I didn't want to be that person. Right. I knew a quarantine was going to come, but I didn't know how and when and what and blah. Beside the fact, my wife had been out shopping that Tuesday, the day where we ended up eventually taking her to the hospital. So the day before, she had been out doing some other shopping at other things, getting stuff for the
right
actual stuff for the pets, like the pet store, like you're talking about, getting crickets instead of getting rats. She had been doing that. So it's like, we've both been out, and probably while we've been exposed. Oh my God. So we get through this day. We're getting through this day. I got all the stuff home. Later that night, her oxygen levels low again.
Oh no.
And low to the point like we're in the high 80s for her oxygen levels.
Oh no. That's so not good.
And she's wheezing.
Oh shit.
And so we're like, this ain't good. She's like, I know, but I didn't get any sleep last night. I'm exhausted. I'm like, all right, here's the deal. You're sitting at 88 right now for your oxygen levels. That's where you're at. Sometimes you get into 90, 91. Do you want to go back tonight or do you want to wait until tomorrow? Because if you want to wait until tomorrow, if you want to try to get a good night's sleep, we'll try that. But if you want to go back tonight, we'll go right now. She's like, no, I want to sleep in my own bed for the night. I'm like, all right. I'm going to be watching you all night long. You know that, right? I'm going to be checking on you all night long. And I did. I checked on her all night. In fact, 2:30, I woke her up, and she went to bed around 9:30, 10 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.
2:30, I woke her up to check her oxygen level because I heard her snoring, so I at least know there was some breathing going on. Mm-hmm. But 2:30, I woke her up to check her oxygen level. She was at about the same level. I'm like, all right, fine, I'll check you again later in the morning, go back to sleep. She didn't really go back to sleep. She was up after that. But come morning time, come about 8 o'clock in the morning, I go up and check her again. And she's still at the same numbers. Mm. So she hasn't really gotten much worse.
Yeah.
But
she also hasn't gotten better. Yeah.
And there's still, and the wheezing is even a little more pronounced. So I'm like, you know what? You're going back. You're going back. We're taking you back in because I'm not cool with this. And I'll let you have some breakfast. You know, you have breakfast, you'll get your medications for the morning. She goes, well, I'd like to take a shower. I'm like, yeah, we'll, I'll get your granddaughter up here. She'll give you the shower, help you with the shower, but you're going back today. And that afternoon, actually right after lunch, so around, or right after breakfast, so around 11 o'clock, we took her back to the ER. Mm-hmm. Well, ER did more tests, more fluids, all that. Around midnight, finally, they had her fully admitted to the hospital and put her in the hospital.
Midnight? It took her 13 hours to get her fully admitted?
Yep. But that's because there is an entire floor of Rideout Hospital, the hospital in Marysville,
uh-huh.
an entire floor that is the COVID floor.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, shit.
These are rooms that are normally single occupancy rooms that they have turned into double occupancy rooms.
No.
For all of this.
Wait, yes. This was how long ago? Last week?
The day that we took her back to the ER and was admitted to the hospital, that was last Thursday. And you know what the date was last Thursday? Last Thursday was December 3rd.
Yeah.
December 3rd, we took her back, and again, why that day is going to stand in remembrance for me.
Yeah.
She was admitted on that day, on that December 3rd. They did the x-rays and showed that she had the beginnings of pneumonia, which is one of the biggest things to hit with COVID-19.
Yeah. No, that's bad. I've actually got, I think it was that same Thursday, I got a note from my mom, and my aunt and uncle have contracted it, and my uncle is in the hospital with pneumonia right now. So I'm kind of half freaking out myself, but it's not a good sign.
No, it's not. So they have her on antibiotic, IV antibiotics. They have her on oxygen. They eventually ended up getting an inhaler for her, which one of the inhalers she ended up actually having a bad reaction to. She had a reaction to the albuterol. It made her heart race a little too much. So they had to switch her to a different one. Nothing major, just a minor bad reaction. Here's the thing. Our COVID story has, at this point, a better happy ending than most. It's not even an ending. A happy midpoint, let's say. Happy midpoint at this point. She was in all day Friday, all day Saturday. Of course, I'm calling nurses and getting updates, getting information from her on updates, getting clarifications, having to talk to the various family members, her sister, two of her daughters. My wife talks to her mom, which is obviously one of the daughters.
Right.
And, you know, coordinating information around everybody, finding out everything I need to know. So she's in there all day Friday. By the end of Friday, they're actually starting to reduce her oxygen intake.
Good.
By Saturday, they're reducing it even more.
Good.
No more x-rays necessary. The wheezing has begun to go down. She's reacting to all of the medications well without any problems. Hates the food, but I think that's only because we're such... Well, I honestly think it's because we're such good cooks here that she just, you know, if it's not good
her
food...
Her standards have gone up way too damn high, dude. What did you do?
Oh, yes. Sorry, just... I mean, look... Come on, man. You know what my body was made out of. It was made out of all the wonderful food that the wife cooks and some of the wonderful food that I cook.
Yeah.
I did a reverse sear on steak this weekend. It's fabulous.
What's a reverse sear?
Good. It's where you cook the steak first. Like normally you'd like sear the steak and then maybe bake it to finish it off. You know what I mean?
What you mean, like sous vide? Kinda?
No, not sous vide. Sous vide is when you put it in plastic and then in water. No, I'm talking about normally like you, like if you're doing a roast or something, right? You'll sear it first, you'll uh-huh. brown it first, and then you'll cook it, right?
Uh-huh.
You can do the same thing with steaks if people like their steaks, medium or you know, medium rare or well done, and you shouldn't be friends with them. But you can, or even with you, even when you're doing like if you're cooking a filet mignon correctly, you should use a pan with a metal handle. Get the pan hot with right. Like olive oil or vegetable oil in it. Mm-hmm. Sear one side for 5 minutes. Sear the other side for like 3 minutes, and then pop it in the oven until the temperature reaches like 140, and then you're perfect. That's perfect for a filet mignon, because filet mignon should be fairly rare, because there's very little connective tissue in it. If you cook it too much, it's going to be nasty and dry.
Right.
And you want that sear on the outside to get the Maillard reaction, to get the good flavor and the crunchies on the outside.
Yeah.
But then you just bring the middle up to temperature by putting it in the oven. That's why you need the metal handle pan to do it, because you don't want to put a plastic handle pan.
Right.
That's bad. But normally you would sear something first, and then you finish cooking the inside of it. It's a newer method that people are using. Well, it's newer that people are using it and talking about it, but I'm sure it's been used many times over during various, you know, iterations of people cooking. But you, instead of searing it first and then cooking through the middle of it, cooking through the rest of it, bringing it all to temperature,
right?
You bring it to temperature first and then sear it, or bring it close to temperature first and sear it at the end. So if you're wanting a good rare, medium rare, like a 145 temperature or so, you maybe want to bring it up to like 135 in the oven, and then pull it out and get the sear on it to bring it up to the final temperature and get the nice crust on the outside.
Oh, okay. I get you. Dude, you're making me want steak really bad too.
I that's a good thing, I guess. Anyway, she didn't like the food, but whatever, she dealt. She found out later that they had her on a cardiac diet, which really ticked her off, because that meant she got no salt on anything, which wasn't necessary for her to be on the cardiac diet, but maybe it's something that they do with people that have some of her medical the pneumonia for COVID. I don't know.
Okay. That would make sense. I mean, you just kind of, they're a hospital, better safe than sorry.
Yeah. So they were able to slowly start reducing her oxygen flow and keep her oxygen numbers in good spots. Like I said, the wheezing was starting to go away a bit. They had medications that were working well with her. And, you know, we were figuring, when I talked to the nurses and stuff on Saturday, it sounded like they were looking at maybe another 48 hours to keep her an observer. And I said, you know what? They may be trying to keep you and observe you, where they're going to take you off the oxygen and see how you do for 24 hours off the oxygen. And if you do all right, then they'll send you home.
Yeah.
This is Saturday evening. This is what I'm saying. I think this is maybe what they're going to do, because it makes sense. Well, I think in a normal, perfect world, that's what they would have done.
Okay.
However, in the COVID world, where the numbers are skyrocketing, and people are coming down with it every single day and needing hospitalization every single day, they don't have the time to live in the perfect world.
Right.
So Sunday morning, I was informed by the nurse. Actually, I was informed by the grandmother, which prompted me to then call the nurse, that she would be coming home on Sunday.
Interesting.
She improved enough to where they would send her home on Sunday.
Good.
So I was scrambling around a bit to figure out how to get that to happen.
Oh, you can't leave.
I wasn't prepared for that. Well, no, technically I can leave to pick her up from the hospital. I can't leave to go do anything else.
Gotcha.
But I can leave to pick her up from the hospital.
Essential travel, right?
Technically, we could go and pick up like a curbside order like you've done, and just have them put it in the trunk and have no interaction with the person.
Right. Okay.
We can do that, which we had actually set up for Sunday. We had set up a curbside order at Walmart for later that day, not expecting her to come home at any point during that day. We didn't expect her till Monday or Tuesday. So for Sunday afternoon, we had set up a curbside appointment to pick up groceries, ordered the groceries online, because there were, you know, even if you think you got everything, which I probably didn't that day because I was panicking so much that Wednesday.
Right.
By Sunday, there were things that we were out of. We have teenagers. They eat things, especially the things that they love. They will eat them. We have a fat guy. He eats things. So that would be me.
Right.
So we do need to get new food at different points in time. So we did an internet order. My wife was going to go pick it up. And we've all been, by the way, in the family, no symptoms at all. I won't say asymptomatic, because we honestly, we have not worried about going to get tested to see if we would test positive for COVID-19 because we were all in such close proximity to the grandmother.
Right.
Me and my wife were, and then we're in such close proximity to our kids that it's more than likely we would all test positive for it. I am sure that there's not an instance within all of us that it wouldn't test positive because we're a family unit together. We do everything together.
Right.
But none of us have shown any real signs or symptoms the entire time. Now, keep in mind, that may mean that as early as, if we're going by the timeline of what I've said, as early as the 24th of November, the grandmother was already possibly sick with COVID-19, because that's when she had her first day of throwing up. So as early as that, she was having
man.
So that means that we've had that much time, almost 2 weeks now, that we've been around somebody that was likely actively dealing with a COVID infection.
Yeah.
So it's very possible that we are the lucky people that don't get any symptoms or have such mild symptoms that it's not even noticed, which again, don't let that lull you into complacency. Don't let that make you not want to take precautions, because that is a roll of the dice that I feel we just got lucky on. And in the same instance,
I mean, the one who was at risk, though, was the one that everybody's warning about being at risk, right? In your entire household, the most at-risk person was the one who showed all the signs.
Well, it was the one who got it and got sick.
Yeah, exactly.
That was the most at-risk person, and she got sick in almost all the ways that they expect an at-risk person to, except the presentation of it just being like more like a stomach bug was a whole different presentation that you hear about some of the nausea, but then you ask all the other questions. Do you have any shortness of breath? Does food taste different? Do you have this? Do you have that? None of those other symptoms come up. So it's like, I'm guessing it's not COVID. There's no reason for it to be.
Right.
It's not, people. So the grandmother came home yesterday, Sunday afternoon, had a normal Sunday dinner, which Sunday dinner in our house is not what you'd expect it to be. Most people think of Sunday dinner, it's like some big roast and potatoes and carrots and, you know, something like that, right? Big hearty, everybody in the family sit around. No. Sunday dinner at our house is turkey sandwiches with bacon.
That sounds amazing. That makes me want, like, you've been telling me about all the food, like, during this whole thing, and I'm hella hungry.
It's my job, sir. That's where my brain is always at, hence the fat. But anyway, and she had her sandwich last night, enjoyed it. Her oxygen levels have been looking pretty good. She is up and moving around in her room. She's confined to it for at least the next week.
Mm-hmm.
We're confining her because, A, we don't want her to try going up and down the stairs right now until we know that she can move around without oxygen. And have her oxygen level be good. And B, just in case of any further infection issues, we're just keeping her up in her room. But she's home. She's breathing okay. And again, I want people to be able to take some lessons away of what to look for. And the fact that this can hit anybody regardless of the precautions that you take. But don't not take the precautions, because we got, at least at this point, we're not done with this yet. She's still needing the supplemental oxygen, and she has it. But we're not done with this yet until she not only has a negative COVID test, but she doesn't need any oxygen anymore, and she can breathe entirely on her own.
Right.
Finish. This is still something that is active, which is why I said this isn't necessarily a happy ending. It's a happy midpoint at this point, in that she was only in the hospital for a couple of days. She's already back home and is doing well and seems to be on the road to recovery. But this could have been so much worse. We have in many ways been as lucky as you could possibly be with having an at-risk person test positive for COVID.
Yeah.
This is the luckiest you could be. I consider us extremely blessed that it wasn't worse than it could have than it was.
Absolutely.
It could have been so much worse.
Yeah. Absolutely.
But this is the thing, is you still need to remain vigilant, just like we still need to remain vigilant. And I guarantee you, everybody at this point, we had no story of anybody that we directly knew at this point that had an issue with it, that we directly knew. Well, now we do. We are that story. We are part of the statistics now.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's, again, it doesn't make me It doesn't make me more cognizant of it. It doesn't make me pay more attention. I was already paying that attention.
Yeah.
And I urge all of you to be paying that attention. Understand this cannon will hit at any time. Be prepared for it. Take what precautions you have you can, and you may get lucky. And by the time this finally does get under control, you may have been lucky to have dodged getting it the entire time. Like I said earlier, if we as a nation had paid better attention, followed the example of other countries, and had shut everything down earlier, we may have prevented this from happening. So far, it hasn't been that bad for her. But I can say now, looking at it, if it gets worse, or it was, if it had been that bad, my anger and my frustration in all of this would be put squarely on the shoulders of all of the people in this country that, for whatever their reason is, put their own personal things above what they could have done to try to mitigate this from still being the problem that it is.
Absolutely.
Because if this had stopped, even with your family that you're talking about, your family that's in the hospital, your uncle, right? In the hospital.
Yeah.
If this had been everything had been followed, we've been able to get rid of this back in July or August or sooner. Your uncle's not in the hospital because he's not getting this. And I'm not talking about a vaccine or anything. I'm talking about following the health guidelines set out by the CDC and the various health departments, shutting everything down except for essential purposes. The pushback kept happening. Push from all the people. And look, they pushed back for schools, and they had to shut the schools back down again because it started raging yet again. Because people don't want to follow the mandates that are put down to say, be safe, stay at home unless you need to be out.
Yep.
Need to be out.
Yep. Absolutely.
And that's where this squarely comes upon. So all I can say is, at this point, that's been our experience. Things are looking up right now. We hope for it to continue being that way.
Yeah.
People remain vigilant. And now you know somebody, if you're listening to this, you know somebody, however personally you know me, as a family that has been affected by this directly.
Yeah.
So a little bit more somber today than we always like to be, although we've gotten this way before. But hey, again, the upside is she is home. She's still making jokes. She is still calling me a horse's ass.
Good.
And I prefer to do it for a long, long time. It also helps that, like, you know, she's like mad rich. Not really. If she was, things would be so much easier. She is Poe as the rest of us. But anyway, see the jokes. You got to have the humor.
You got to have them.
Even in the tragedy. All right. So that's it for us today. I hope you enjoyed listening. I hope you learned something. I hope, hopefully it makes you more aware of what's going on, looking for signs in people, and understanding that this isn't some distant thing that's not affecting you. It can be affecting you at any moment in time. So be aware and be proactive about trying to make it better. Mike, where are they going to be listening to us?
Well, you could find us on the zenialchronicles.com or zencron.com, spelled X-E-N-C-H-R-O-N, if you don't want to type that much. We are also available on most podcasting platforms. We're on TuneIn. We're on Spotify. We're on, I don't think Google's not around anymore. I know we are on YouTube, which, by the way, if you wanted to check us out on YouTube, we do have a YouTube page, so please go find us there if you're not listening to us on YouTube already. That is going to be, just search for the Zenial Chronicles on YouTube. And if you're listening to us on YouTube right now, please make sure to hit the like button on the video and hit the subscribe button. And James, I believe there's one more thing that they got to do if they're listening to us. What was that?
Click the bell.
That's right. Please click the bell to make sure you get notified on the next podcast we put out on YouTube. And I believe
that one sounded hoarse, didn't it? That click the bell.
Click the
that
bell.
A little hoarse. Click the bell.
It's kind of a haunted click the bell.
Just click the bell, people.
Yeah, just click the damn bell.
Click the bell. That's another type of ghost. That's like Disneyland ghost.
Yeah.
So after you've watched this, you've liked it, you've subscribed, you've clicked the bell, and please click the bell and also the subscribe. I'm a little bit miffed because, like, one of the other things I'm about to talk about, it ended up with 100 subscribers, so they're getting their URL for it.
freaking... We haven't gotten it yet, by the way. It's taken like almost a week.
Well, it's crazy. At least it's going to, hopefully it'll come at some point. Anyway,
hopefully, yeah.
We like to get the 100 people so that we can.
Yeah, we want.
Hey, I'm talking.
Sorry. No, sorry. Sorry. I will give it to you.
I want to get the 100 people so that you and I can, I can join you. Actually, let's say it this way. I can join you in the sitting around and waiting to get the URL instead of you and your wife waiting to get the URL. It's so annoying sometimes that you share these things with your wife and you don't share them with me.
What, custom URLs?
Yes. Hey, we had the YouTube channel first. We had it first, but no, you go and get a URL with her. What the hell ever?
I mean, I don't know where to go with this.
I'm glad I didn't buy the matching cock rings. Anyway, if you're watching us on YouTube and you've done all the things on YouTube, at the same time, can you go and check out Mike's other two things? He's got I can't even remember the name of the music one now. This is supposed to be part of my whole spiel, and I lost it all.
You know why? It was the cock rings. That's why.
Must have been, yeah. It was a great joke, and it just
threw the whole thing off the rails, man.
your music page, Mike.
Ruling Note Music.
What's the music page, damn it?
Ruling Note Music.
Thank you. Ruling Note Music. Check out Mike there. He's giving all kinds of information about recording stuff, music history. In fact, interestingly enough, do you know what Eminem got for Elton John and David Furnish when they got married as a wedding gift?
I don't, but something tells me it's related to what we were just talking about.
Yep, it's cock rings.
That's fantastic.
He got them diamond encrusted cock rings, but of course, you know, he's a homophobe. Anyway,
I would consider that appropriate.
Elton John loved it. He thought it was a great gift. I don't think he's ever used them, but he thought it was a great gift. I don't want to know if he's ever used them. And then when you're done with that, with Ruling Note Music, go check out Chronosode Games. This is the one that has 100 subscribers now, so it should be getting its own custom URL. This is Mike sucking terribly at video games.
Oh, yes.
While his wife comments along and makes fun of him, I'm sure.
Yes.
I've been around them enough to know that does happen regularly.
Oh, yes.
And so please check all of those out, like all of those, subscribe to all of those. Why? Because it just makes us feel good. We need something to make us feel good. And it gives you stuff to listen to and watch.
Yeah.
Like this you're listening to, but the other two you actually get to watch stuff. And I mean, seriously, are you going to go and watch Grey's Anatomy for like the 17th time? Are you going to go and try to watch Game of Thrones again? Really? Again, you already know what happens. The last season, they screw the entire thing up. That's what happens. Okay, you already know that. But when you're watching our stuff, we're actually still giving you new content regularly. And yes, in the Chronosode Games, you know Mike is going to do something stupid.
Yep.
But hopefully it's a different stupid each time.
Yep.
And hey, we need a reason to laugh. And why not laugh?
Exactly. That's what it's all about.
Exactly. Thank you for listening, everybody, and we'll be back again next week.
Y'all have a good one.
Thank you for tuning in, friends. The journey continues next week.